Okay, a good energy, and that came from where? His knowledge, his passion, and his pace. Do you notice that his energy level came through the pace? He was talking pretty fast, wasn't he? Now he paused here and there, and he slowed down, but he had a good pace, which created a lot of energy. Yeah? If I were to say something, I would say, you know, maybe a few more pauses, vary a little bit more. But his overall pace was good if he would have varied it a little bit more, and that created energy. Okay, good. What else did you notice? Did he believe in his product? Any doubt? Did anybody think it was hype or was it pure passion? Okay. Okay, we'll go. What else did you like? You want to know if he trained with me? We've done some things back and forth. What else? Now, let's talk about some great things. Before we get to you, let me bring up one thing. How powerful was the soul for those of you that did purchase? Well, first of all, the product is pretty much a no-brainer. It's a great product, isn't it? And there was a lot of social validation. There were people here in the audience that loved it and are using it. Does that sway? Is that more important than anything he could have said? So the biggest things he had going for him was a social validation. And how did he do with the contrast and building the value? Was the value there? He did real. So the two things going for him, I think the biggest thing was the social validation. You guys are using it and you love it. And the second thing is, he built the value. It became a no-brainer, right? I need this. You're going to save money, and it's a great product. Okay, go. Some urgency there. Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah, that establishes the value, doesn't it? This is a $15,000 system, and you get it for X amount of dollars. So what do you think could have been better as you become great persuaders? Sure. There was vomit. He vomited. There were so many features. There's only three or four that you're really interested in. All the ones are nice, and you'll find those out later, but there's only about two or three that you're really interested in today. And then there was a vomit. He tends to vomit, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. You just had a different presentation. Oh. How do you apply it? How can I use this now? It's either, as business owners, there's two things that concern you, and this is true if you talk to any other business owner, two things. How do you make money, make more money, and how do you save money? And that's, he can do a little bit of both. Yeah. So you thought there'd be more credibility, so there's X, Y, and there's Z, and you're probably looking at something, it's kind of a unique thing, so sometimes we're looking at something to compare it to. Remember I had the $500, yeah. That $500 bill, you're like, well, who do I compare that to? Yeah. So you're looking for other social validation. Okay? Yeah. Okay. We'll talk about that. Okay. Good point. Yeah. Was it confidence? Did anybody think he was a little cocky? Okay. Fair enough. Remember, they either laugh with you or feel sorry for you or hate you. Sure. Is your perception? Okay. Interesting, the feedback. See, you start analyzing these things a lot more. Wait, that was good, that was good. And that's a good thing. That's how you become better. What you liked, what you didn't like. Yeah. From the presentation. The only other thing I would add is that in a short presentation, is back to you. Did you notice that? It's one of those non-verbals that you just wouldn't touch, especially in a short presentation like that. Sure. You're just a number? Yeah, that's what's in it for him. That's not what's in it for you. Now, if you're focused, yeah. Okay, interesting. All right. Well, let's one last comment. Go ahead. Good point. Good point. All right, well, let's finish up deception. Here's some housekeeping. We're going to shoot for around 3 o'clock in this event. Some of you already had to take off for flight. I know some of you have flights, but here's the agenda. We're going to go for to about 3, around there. And then you have 3 options. We've got some consultants back there that can help you with internet and real estate and foreclosures. You're welcome to stay and talk to them as long as you want. The secret will also be shown. And then for those of you who want to do one more negotiation exercise, I have 2 options for you. If you want to do just do a quick one, We have one that'll take you about 20 minutes. If you really want an intense Harvard one, which is probably 2 to 3 times harder than the Appleton versus Baker, it'll take you about 45 to 50 minutes. If you want to grab a partner, those are available too. And we're going to stick around and walk you through it. It's your option. If you want to run and go hit the casinos, you can do that too. I know we've got a lot of information, but they're there. We're here for you, whatever you want to do. Yeah. No, I'm kidding. You can take one. You're welcome to grab one in the back. So whatever you want to do, we're here. You want to do some one-on-ones? You want to do some negotiations? A medium one or a hard one, you're welcome to do that. The secret will be shown too. It's probably something you need to watch about 112 times until you really get it. Like, have you seen it more than 20 times? Well, pretty close. Good for you. All right, let's finish deception. Neuroscience, don't need to write this down. It says, evidence shows how we get people to like us. As we like someone to make the person feel good about themselves, the dendrite connections between the neurons and the brain physically change. They form a new neural patterns that make the person want to cooperate with us. This is what I want to point out, is that mood matters. You had a fight with your spouse. You're angry. You need to go meet with someone. You put on that fake smile. Hi, good to see you. Can they sense it? Now, they're not thinking, oh, fall with your spouse. I can feel it. What are they thinking? Something's not quite right. Yeah, you could be thinking that too. And they've done studies in restaurants. Does your mood affect how you evaluate the food? Does your mood during a job, when the job interview or doing the job interviews, if they're in a bad mood, it will affect your evaluation. Mood is a very important thing. Your job as a persuader is A, to be in the right mood. And what great persuaders do is I study them. They have the ability to take rejection, take a couple minutes, and get back into a good mood. Very quick, very fast, very simple for them. And here it is. When you are in a good mood, we retrieve happy thoughts and experiences. We think about all the positive things. What could go right? We're more aware of these positive things about you. We recall happy memories. Isn't that the state you want them in? It's very important. Get them into a good mood. Esteem, praise is a quick way to do that. Compliment. It's like those telemarketers, you're in a bad mood in the middle of dinner and they call and it's a bad time. What do they do? Do they call back later or what? They try to get through the presentation, don't they? They don't even care. And it's not going to matter anyway. If you're in a bad mood, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what they say. So, yeah. So bad moods, we tend to retrieve negative thoughts, recall negative memories, recall all the times we were taken advantage of. It triggers comparing and analyzing. What about this and what about that? It's just two different worlds. They're easier to persuade when they are in a better mood, period. Even in a hotel, they did a study where they were trying to see how the tip size. They put people in this room where they couldn't see outside. They couldn't see the weather. And they found out, could the weather affect our mood? Even when you can't see it? They either said it was cold and rainy, cold and sunny, warm and rainy, and warm and sunny. Tips increased 26% when the word sunny was in there. Even when they couldn't see it, that was amazing. They even couldn't see it. So weather has a factor too. So let's get into our nonverbals. How do we read people? When someone's rejecting you, rejecting your message, they don't like you, how do you know? Their eyes get cold, they drift, the answers get short, and the biggest sign that many aren't aware of is when you're talking to somebody and their shoulders are angled, you're like this and they're talking to you like this, they're ready to go, they're ready to run. And so you need to make sure when you're talking to someone that you're squared up with them, but if you're reading someone, they just slowly start turning their shoulders or start looking away, that's a sign they're done with you, they're rejecting you, they don't want anything to do with you. Now subconsciously, if you want to kind of move your body a little bit so you can square up, that's one thing you could do. Because they don't even know they're doing it. They're not thinking, oh, I don't like this person, I'm turning my shoulder. They don't do that, it's just something they sense. So rejection. Then there's depression. The chin drops when people get depressed. Slumped shoulders. Long sigh, they've given up. Their eyes look down. They're all signs of depression. then we have anger. Head tilts up, a lot of times the chin will go up. People are mad at you if you notice that. Even with dogs and animals do the same thing. Then the squint, the jaw muscles will start to flex. Grind of teeth. That's anger. Right? So the jaw muscle and the squinting. Indifference. This is a big one you need to see. You've lost them. It's almost like they look older. Because all the energy's out of the face, their facial muscles hang. They look older. It's just, they're indifferent, they don't care, they're done with you, they've turned off. So the arms should be behind the neck. They can start squirming, looking towards the door more, looking at their watch. Not really answering your questions would be another indication of indifference. Now, on the flip side of indifference is, are they interested? The time when you know it's time to shut up and ask for their business. When they ask you about warranties, when they ask you about delivery, when they ask you about certain questions, you know it's time. They start leaning forward. They start matching you a little more. The head, you can see a slow nod up and down with their head. You can see the approving glances between a husband and a wife sometimes. It sounds interested. The questions that they're asking, mentally, they're thinking about delivery. They're about thinking about doing. What would happen if? Listen. Remember, you're talking too much. You're vomiting. We've been talking about big lesson this weekend. Okay? Confusion. Mouth tends to tighten. You get a puzzled look on their face. And this is really important to say because they're not going to ask you a question, are they? Most people won't ask you. You need to react. It seems like you have a question. Let me clarify for that. Let me explain it one more time. Their eyes tend to squint a little bit. Confusion. Might see a slight scowl on their face. All right. Now let's get into deception. Would people really lie to you? Is it okay to lie? Sometimes it's okay to lie? What's the verdict here? Is it okay to say you're sick and not going to work? Is that okay? 60% say that's okay. 80% say it's okay to lie if someone says, how do I look? Well, there's a loaded question for you. What do you say there? You don't want to hurt their feelings? You look terrible. Did you just wake up? You have to be careful what you say. So we're talking about the other type of deception. Those are kind of, I guess we'll put those in the gray category. We're talking about the deception where they're trying to take advantage of you. They're lying to you, whether it's a teenager, whether it's a realtor, something about their home. We'll talk about it. So they're either going to withhold information and not tell you the whole story, or they're going to falsify information. So we're on page 31. Yep, deception. Now here's the key thing I want you to understand. People that tell the truth play offense, and people that lie play what? Defense. When you're telling the truth, aren't you expecting to be believed? If you're lying, you're kind of hoping they believe you, and it's kind of a different mindset. And you have to understand, too, when people lie, it takes a lot of energy, doesn't it? It takes a lot of cognitive ability to lie and make things up and do some different things. So you can see the brain click on. They're thinking a lot more. The person that accuses a bartender of watering down the drinks is probably the person that what? Waters down drinks. The person that doesn't trust very many people is usually not very trustworthy. So we have to take a look at this. So we talk about deception leakage. What are we looking for? Okay, we have the verbal. There's inflections, there's word choice, there's voice. We're all looking for those. And there's certain things that we've been taught that indicates lying that people are getting pretty good at covering up. But we're looking at the whole package here. Then we're looking at the face, the body, and the eyes. We'll get into that. We'll get into each one of these. We'll get into each one. Just give you an overview. So your goal is to make them feel as comfortable as they want. Make them feel comfortable. You just kind of go in. This is what we're okay here. We're good. Face, body, eyes. So detecting deception, what you need to do is you have no preconceptions. You're going to assume They're not either lying or telling. You're coming in neutral. And your goal is to find their standard behavior. Make them feel comfortable. So you're coming in, and what are you going to talk about that they're not going to lie about? Children, family, and you're looking for different things. If they can't look at you when they're talking about their family, what does that tell you? Well, no, if that's their standard behavior and they're not nervous, that means that's just who they are. There's some people that can't make eye contact. Isn't that true? So that wouldn't be a sign for deception, would it? Because that's part of their standard behavior. If they fold their arms a lot, or they're talking about things when they're feeling comfortable, then that's not a standard behavior. Because what you're looking for is clusters. You're looking for two or three things that point to deception. Not just one. Maybe their blinking increases, other things happen. And so you're looking, if you make them feel comfortable, take note. Eye contact, how are they standing, what are they doing with their arms? Find their standard behavior. Okay. So let's talk about the clues. Let's turn the page. Now the challenge is that 61% of all communication involves some sort of deception. And sometimes it's a little things. 61%. Sometimes it's the little things like, what did you do this weekend? Well, I stayed home and watched TV all day. Ate a lot of bonbons and Cheetos. A lot of people say what? They'll kind of embellish a little bit. So it could be a little things, but it could be the big things too. So let's look at the eyes. Now, everyone knows that if you don't look at them in the eyes, they're lying. Isn't that what you heard? We've heard that one before, so we're good at falsifying it. So what happens is, you look at their standard eye contact during the beginning, and if it changes, if it's forced, they're just looking at you a little too much, that would be a red flag for you. Or if they avoid, they were looking at you before, and now they're avoiding, that's another red flag. So their eye contact is changing from before. It's either forced or they're avoiding it. Increased blinking. You can notice the difference between the two. And pupils tend to dilate when people lie. That nervousness, things happen, the pupils will dilate. Eyes are the windows to the soul. You tell a lot from the eyes. Arms and shoulders. We see crossing of the arms, if that wasn't a standard behavior. We've talked about the angle, the shoulders being turned away. And sometimes you'll just see a slight shoulder shrug. Arms and shoulders. The legs, nervousness, constant crossing and uncrossing, which is different from their standard behavior. The knees tend to bounce, and the feet tend to go underneath. If their normal behavior is their feet out in front of them, they start to go underneath the chair. Because when we lie, we tend to come into almost a smaller position. We kind of get away, we get smaller, the feet go underneath us. Those are just some things that you're looking for. They're trying to get smaller almost, especially if they're sitting down. Or liars also, when there's deception, they tend to be not as close to you. If they were proximate to right in your face, but when they start lying and they're backing up a little bit, that would be another sign. Sure. Yeah, it's both. Some people believe the lie and they become really good at lying, but a lot of these are subconscious things that they can't control. There's some things that we can control, but a lot of these things we can't control. So there are conscious things they can control and they believe it, but they're subconsciously, they know they're lying, and a lot of these things still trigger. But there are some people that do lie much better than others. Part of it is believing that lie. Definitely. The head. This is one we're best at controlling. Slight tilt. Our hands touch our head quite a bit. So this is the one people tend to control. If it looks fake, probably the main thing that you're looking for. They know that's what you're looking at, but you're looking at the whole package, the whole body. Just touching like this, or yeah, habits like that. Covering the mouth. That's a sign of deception, especially people when they cover their mouth. It's one of those things. Now, if they did that in their standard behavior, they don't like their teeth, that might be part of their standard behavior. But if it's a new thing that you're picking up, that would be one of the clusters that you're looking for. No, people are best at controlling falsifying the movements with their heads. The mouth. Swallowing increases. Tend to bite our lip. Again, we start covering our mouth some more. Interesting, swallowing tends to increase, but saliva flow tends to be reduced. Like, I think it was in India, thousands of years ago, to see if you were lying, they would take a hot poker out of the fire and stick it on your tongue. And if it burned you, you were lying, and if it didn't, you weren't. Some countries would make you chew on rice, and if it came out dry, you were lying. If it came out wet, you were telling the truth. It's one of those things. That's one of the signs. The nose. When you get nervous and apprehensive, blood flow increases to the nose. The ears may turn red. They might have allergies. They might have allergies, and it might not be an issue, but it could be something to take a look at. Ears might turn a little pink or red. You might see a change in breathing in your body. So perspiring, you'll be sweating a little more. Physically, we've talked about they're moving back. They're not as close as they were before. And it almost looks like they're mechanical. Something's just not right. They're just kind of going through the motions. They're trying to stop themselves from moving so much. Forcing the eye contact like we talked about. Okay? And this takes time. This is not something you're going to happen overnight. But start looking at all your instinct. Look for these clues. Vocal, as far as the voice, pauses increase. Why do you think that is? They're thinking. They're thinking. So you'll see longer pauses. That was different than what you saw before. You will see an increase in vocal fillers. Like, or the same words again over and over again, which you're matching to the standard behavior. Some people just do that normally. Speech errors that they didn't have before. Errors in their speech. Vocal. You might see some hesitation. Volume. They'll tend to mumble a little bit more. Tend to get a little softer. Kind of minimizes their focus. It's like they're withdrawing a little bit. They're trying to get ready. They want to leave. They're done talking about it. And then you have facial. It could be a twitch. Now we have when we talked about the dentist study yesterday with the dentists and the congruence and the placebo, we have micro expressions that last 1/100 of a second that we just our subconscious kind of picks up. And that's how we like, because you know the feeling, they're lying to me? It's usually a micro expression, just a quick thing that we can only pick up on film as we want to monitor liars. What you're looking for here is expressions that last too long. If they smile a little too long, if the expressions seem a little too fake, anything, because most expressions last 2 to 3 seconds. If you're seeing an expression like a smile or a smirk or something that's longer than that, it's a fake expression. Does that make sense? So micro expressions are usually quick. Our expressions are usually really quick, but when they're falsifying it, they usually do it too long. Yeah, good to see you. I'm so glad you came. It's been a good weekend. I'm kidding. Hands. They're trying to control their hands because they know that's a sign. So it'll be less spontaneous, more deliberate movements that seem kind of fake, like they're pushing it on you or just don't seem natural. And with that's a decrease in hand movements because eyes and hands, they know, could give themselves away. So there'll be a decrease. Okay. Rate. You'll see two things. The rate will change from their standard behavior. If it decreases, it's usually a sign of sadness or disinterest. If it increases, it's usually a sign of anger or excitement. So the rate changes. It either speeds up or slows down. Just the rate. The words per minute. You see a difference from their standard, that's usually a sign. Usually it slows down because they're thinking more, they're pondering. It takes a lot of mental energy to lie. You just can see their brain clicking on, they're thinking more because they don't want to blow it. So we're down to content clues. Now let's just look at content. They're in the middle of the page. It depends on the person. A lot of people will be very vague. There'll be a lack of detail. But then the other people, usually your analyticals, will just overload you with information. They'll just say way too much. Things you don't even care about. Sometimes they'll get sarcastic and attack you back. They feel like you're catching them in a lie. Or a lot of times we see inappropriate humor. Just didn't fit. It just didn't make sense. They're nervous. They're making a bad joke. They're being sarcastic. It's interesting. If your teenager said they went to the library, and you don't think they did, what could you say? Well, they're anticipating what? All your questions. Which would probably be what? Who did you study with? What did you study for? They got that. But then if you ask them, well, what floor did they study on? Or who was the librarian that was on duty? What color was her hair? You're going to see a different reaction. Or we went skiing. Really? Did they have 3 or 4 person chairlifts? And if they answer it, you know, that's what you think. You're anticipating something they haven't prepared for. Whether it be in a negotiation or anything about the house. And we're going to talk about the eye movements here in a little bit. Inappropriate humor, sarcastic, just didn't seem right, they're nervous. So when you're detecting lies, when you see your first sign, you don't call them on it, like we talked about. Play it out. If they think they're deceiving you, that's good. Because then they're going to put their guard down, it's going to be much easier to detect. If they don't think they're pulling it across, it's going to be much harder. They won't cover their tracks, they won't anticipate it. And this is a science. You can get really good at this. Sensing people, they're indifferent, they're rejecting me, they're lying. Picking up these clues and become very natural. Just like walking, this can become very natural for you. It's a very powerful skill. And there's a whole science we talked about called FACS, which is Facial Action Coding System, which talks about how to know if it's been falsified. Really interesting. Paul Ekman, E-K-M-E-N, very interesting science. Stalling. We know that because they're thinking. They could ask you to repeat the question. I'm sorry, I didn't hear it. Clearing their throat, coughing, buying time, having to use the restroom, anything that stalls. No, maybe they have to go. If you're looking for clusters. Clusters. No, this is what they do. They're stalling because they're trying to think of a reason or excuse or an answer. All right? Now some red flags at the bottom of the page. You bet. It's not working. No. Whoa. Okay, we're going. Here we go. Did not understand. I didn't understand. Could you repeat that? You're not making any sense to me. Are you drinking? What's going on? Throw these things out, stall it. So red flags. Repeating the words that we talked about. Could you repeat that? What about the phrase? I didn't understand that. What are you trying to say? It's not making any sense to me. They try to change focus to something else. They want to talk about something else. Do liars want to talk about the thing you're talking about if they're lying? Or do they want to move on as fast as possible? They want to move on. Or we talked about pulling the religious card. People that are good religious people don't bring up the religious card from what I found. Is that true? They start bringing up the religious card and showing you their Bible or whatever it is. That's sometime a red flag. Red flag. Well, we're God-fearing people. We don't need to sign a contract. Oh, wow. Way back to hands. How far back was that? Here we go. Decrease in hand movement. Okay. You got it. Eye direction. Let's go to that page. This is, have you studied this in NLP? A few of you have. Eye directions. It was actually, a lot of people think it came up from Bandler and Grinder. But it actually was started in 1972 by a couple other people. You don't need to write these down, but these are the kind of people that started the science. They noticed in right-handed people, and it kind of switches for left-handed people, that their eye movements. Now, we know that visual people tend to look up, kinesthetic people tend to look down, but the FBI and everybody else says, where do your eyes go when you're lying? So I'm going to show you Sam up here. We'll call him Sam. Isn't he beautiful? This is just like you're looking at a person. So wherever his eyes go, this is just like you're looking at him, okay? So you look at the person next to you, you're looking at Sam. When their eye moves in a certain direction, it's going to tell you quite a few things. So when the eyes move up that way, when the eyes move up and to the left, as you're looking at them, write down, it's visually constructed. VC stands for visually constructed. It means you're making it up. They're trying to, and I say, can you imagine an orange elephant? Do you feel what your eyes do? A little bit? Can you imagine an orange elephant? What if the Statue of Liberty was pink? What they're doing is they're constructing visual images that don't exist. This is just one of the clues that you're looking for. Internal images, things you've never seen before. Could you imagine your spouse with pink hair? Yes, you can. Those are visions. So this is a big red flag. As you're looking at them and they look up and to the left, your left, that's a red flag because they are pulling from images that they've never seen. Now, if they look to the side, it's called audio created. Now they're making up words they've never heard before. They're trying to remember something. Remember, we're either visual, auditory, or kinesthetic. Can you imagine a train whistle if you've never heard that before? Audio created. Or if I said, well, what if you had to introduce your next door neighbor at a gathering? You'd have to think of those words when you print it. Okay. Then you have kinesthetic. Down there at the bottom, it's called kinesthetic. It's meaning you're experiencing emotions. This doesn't tell you anything either way. It just means they're feeling an emotion. They're feeling strong emotions. You know, so you say, when's the last time you felt wet? Or what if you were walking on the carpet and it turned to butter? You try to experience those feelings. Now, what if they're looking straight ahead and just kind of in a daze? They're spacing out. They're indifferent. They're just, you've lost them. Okay, you've lost them. Now, up to the, when you look it up to the right, that's visually remembered. So you're recalling something. What's the color of your car? What did it look like when you were at the Grand Canyon last time? What is the pattern of your bedspread in your hotel room? Yes, both those are red flags. So the two big red flags would be DC and AC. All right, next we have AR, which is audio remembered. So that's the opposite. They're remembering a nursery rhyme they've heard before. They're remembering, can you remember your mother's voice? What did the sound of your mom sound like? Can you remember the sound of your grandmother's voice? Do you remember the words to that song? What does the ringer on your home phone sound like? And then down to the right is AD, which is auditory digital. Basically what that means is you're having self-talk. You're talking to yourself. Auditory digital. It means you're just talking to yourself. Like I said, well, what's the eighth letter of the alphabet? So, and you would have to go through it. That would be auditory digital. You're having a basically, they're having a conversation with themselves. They're talking to themselves. Again, this is not 100%, but the studies show this is pretty accurate for right-handed people. It's pretty interesting science. But your main red flags, the main thing for most of the people, if you remember one thing, is the visually what? Constructed. That's the biggest one you're going to see because most people are visual, and that's the biggest red flag. So just remember one thing. If you're looking at them and they look where? Up to the left. That's going to be your biggest red flag out of all of them. If you remember one, that's the one to remember. Usually. Tell us a lie. These are as you're looking at it. You're looking at the person. So the red flag would be right here. Wait, we're going the wrong direction. Okay. I can't lie to you. I love this hotel. I look down, right? I love this hotel. This is the best place ever. All right, responses to conflict. So people that tend to lie tend to go from zero to angry really fast. It's a conflict for them. They tend to speak faster. Or they become quiet. People respond differently. Or there's some type of hidden aggression. Little slams. Increased heart rate. A lot of different things as we talked about conflict. We talked about negotiation. We handle conflict in a different way. So, talk about that, which is coming off as the victim mentality. When people are their victims, it's not their fault. Foreclosure. Because there's an outside suppressor. Someone's out to get them. They are the victim, which is very dangerous because we talked about if you're the victim, guess what? It's not your fault. There's nothing you can do about it. They want to avoid responsibility, but the good news for you, when people are on the victim cycle, they're looking for what? somebody to rescue them. So if you see it, censor and the victim, they've given up. There's nothing they can do, so they're looking for someone to help them, to rescue them, to save them. There's some outside suppressor. And a little thing like not liking bank either, or understand, well, that's true, it hurts, and maybe it's not fair, might be to your benefit. Then there's statistics. Did we take statistic classes before? Mind-numbing. But the one thing you do learn is you can prove anything with statistics. Is that true? Now, statistics are still very important to use as long as they're used in the right way and as long as they're credible, especially with analytical people. They love statistics. They love statistics. So use them sparingly and make sure they're believable, and you tell people where they come from. The challenge with statistics is you got things like random sampling. What would random sampling be? Maybe if you went to Washington, D.C. and interviewed people about term limits. Would that give you the feeling for the whole United States? It wouldn't. Then there's convenient sampling. Well, I'll interview everybody coming out of the public library. That's the easiest way to get my data. Is that going to give you equal data about everybody? And now with phones, a lot of people aren't answering their phones. It's hard to get the data that they want. And then there's scale distortion. This is the big one I want you to look out for, especially in real estate and other things when you look at different scales. Here is a graph. You notice that Frank, who's in the, this would be a light green, is doing the best, but I can make one adjustment there. And what's it look like? See what I did? Instead of going up to 90 on the left, I just brought it to 50. You see what it did to him? It's one of the things that we kind of have to be careful of as we take a look at statistics. And then, of course, these, the big three, if you've ever said, the mean, the median, and mode are very different. You aware of that? The mean is the average, which is different than the median. The median is the middle number. And the mode is the number that shows up the most. So those three numbers give you very different things as far as responses and understanding statistics and how people use statistics. So the big part of deception is finding the standard behavior, looking for clusters. Just going to review these notes when you go into a situation as you look at their eyes. You see a big difference. It'll start becoming the instinct. And that's true with all these laws of persuasion. In fact, have you learned anything in the last 3 days? A little bit? A lot there? Now the key here is what? Application. First time you try anything, it's a little awkward, it's a little different, but you start trying these things, they use it. It's true with detecting deception or anything. So to finish up, well, let's go to page 52. I just want to give you a quick overview of a few things I want you to take a look at and work on. 52. Persuasion IQ. Now, the persuasion IQ test you took here was very small and not as comprehensive as the other one I did. The one I came up with is actually 250 questions, which is very intense. This is a much smaller one. The one of the things we do is I monitor top persuaders. Now, can top persuaders usually tell people what to do? Or are they just good because it's kind of an instinct? You ever see that in network marketing or real estate? Well, just do this. Just make phone calls and just the transferring of the skills. And so what I've done is monitor top persuaders. What are they doing? So I want to give you the 10 things that are critical for top persuaders. Just a quick review. What do they have that makes them so successful? Optimism is part of that. The psychological edge. And optimism would be part of that. The mental programming. The mindset. We've talked a lot about human nature the last couple days. Understanding that you have a psychological edge, giving yourself permission to win. Understanding the programming. So they think differently. Millionaires think differently. Top persuaders think differently. They have a psychological edge. While people in a poverty mindset, oh, it's not important. Give me the tools. I've heard that before. I'm doing okay. That's the, you know, big form of denial. Well, I'm doing okay. The second one is the consumer mindset. Understanding how people think. We've learned more about the human brain and decision making in the last 20 years than we had the last 100 years combined. Why we do what we do. And a lot of times, is it fair to say we don't know why we do what we do, we just do it? And then we justify it later with something else, and that wasn't the real reason we did it, but it sounded good, and that's the reason we say we did it. Objection psychology. You got that. Objection psychology, consumer mindset, understanding all the subconscious triggers. Colors. We talked about smells. Gestures. Let's back up the colors a little bit. What is the color that's the first color that triggers in a human? Yellow, okay. That's why fire trucks and fire engines and fire hydrants are turning. You notice? It's starting to turn yellow. If you take orange juice and put food coloring in one and leave the other one the same orange juice, we get different evaluations. You can do that with strawberry. And there's colors like, for example, McDonald's. What are their colors? Red and yellow stimulate appetite. People eat faster. You go to a nicer restaurant, what kind of colors do they use? Darker colors, browns, maroons, stay longer. It's just much different. Even with pills. The white pills were too weak. The black pills were too strong, even though they were the same pills. Even they had laundry detergents. When it was red on the outside, it was too strong. It was hurting the clothes. When it was blue, it was too weak. Just amazing. You understand what colors. Consumer mindset. Third, we've talked quite a bit about rapport. We've talked about attraction, the halo effect. We've talked about rapport, mirror and matching in your nonverbals. We've talked about people skills. And here's the numbers, the blunt numbers again, just to remind you. When they like you, you have a 90% chance of success and persuade them. If they don't like you, it's 10%. Big piece right there. We have to add some other pieces, because if you have great people skills and nothing else, you're making a lot of friends, but not doing much else. Four. And then there's trust. Are you trustworthy? Are you predictable? Great persuaders have the instinct to create that trust. People just like them. They trust them. They want to tell them their life story. Anybody rattle off the five C's of trust? Without looking it up? Character? Congruence is one. Competent? Credibility? Confidence. You already have in your notes. I was just curious. Let's see. Good job. Then power. You are the expert. Start acting like the expert. You're the one that can save them from the situation. You are a problem solver, whether it be a network marketing business, being an entrepreneur, in real estate, you are a problem solver. You have the power, you have the expertise. That could be knowledge power. That could be power from being the expert. Number six is influence. Now remember, influence is a higher form of persuasion. Charisma, passion, vision, optimism, empathy, all come under influence. And this is ultimately what you want with people. You don't need any facts, figures, data, statistics. They are just going to trust you. Number seven, motivation. They have the ability for two things, to stay motivated themselves and to motivate other people. What are the two motivators in life? Fear and greed, pleasure, pain, reward, punishment, or we've talked about inspiration and desperation. Now the reality is, what's going to motivate you more? Or most people are motivated out of desperation, aren't they? Can you motivate anybody with desperation? Do we know any lazy teenagers? I can motivate them. They're on the couch watching the TV, they won't move. I talk to them for a little while, good motivational speech, and then go out in the garage, get a can of gasoline, and light the couch on fire. And what's going to happen? They're at the fastest you've ever seen them move. But once the fire's put out and the couch has been replaced and I've been arrested, what do they turn back into? That desperation. So it's a good temporary thing. But long-term motivation goes to inspiration or that passion. You need to learn how to use both. And you just have to be reality. Some days, desperation is going to motivate you. Now, is desperation better than inactivity? Sure. It's not the best, but it's better than activity. As you move, it's funny that we see as we people grow in their wealth and their success, they spend less, they started in desperation, but then they start spending more time where? In inspiration. And this is true when you motivate other people. Inspiration versus desperation. The next one is communication skills. This is face-to-face, over the phone, your communication skills. How are people ranking you? How are they judging you? Why aren't people calling you back? Is that a challenge? Should you ever leave a message when you're calling somebody on the phone? Yeses and no's, what do you think? How many times should you call them before you give up? Here's the challenge. Let's go back to the phone. Let's talk about this real fast. Let's say network marketing or even real estate, whatever. We'll take network marketing. Someone's really excited. One of the pieces with network marketing is, if they're excited and they're ready to go, why are you sending them to a website? What are the chances that you're going to hear from them again? You think about this? Why would you send them to a website? Why would you send them to a presentation? Why would you send them something in the mail when you got them excited the first time? The hardest thing is to get in that conversation again. So here's the thing. You know, they're all excited, and you say, okay, go to my website, and I'll call you, and read everything there, and I'll call you in 3 days. And you call in 3 days, and you say, did you read the information? What do you think? And what do they say? No, I'm not interested. What should you say? What's wrong with that picture? And this happens all the time, whether it be real estate or network marketing. Well, first thing you need, you have to understand that when you last time you talked to them, you built the emotions up, they were excited, you took good notes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, your goal is to build that emotion back up, talk about those dreams again, get them to that same emotional state that you had them before, and then you can ask them if they went to the website or do what you did. That's huge. Yeah, you could get that saying, last time we talked about this, and what was your favorite thing, and what did you see? Get the emotions built back up, because every phone call is an interruption. True? Unless you've got an appointment, you're interrupting something, so you need to rebuild that emotion. And I would only leave a message if you're giving up trying to talk to them live, and every time you leave a message, you should include something in there with that includes a Zagarnik effect. What's the Zagarnik effect? No, not quite. Zagarnik is when there's something unfinished, something they need to do. So if you leave a message, what should you leave in that message? Well, I've got this report I found I want to send to you. I found this great website I thought of you, I want to send it to you. There's this thing, this CD I want to, you to list, this audio I want you to list on the, something they need to do to call you. Does that make sense? Not just to call you, there needs to be another reason to call you. It goes a long way. And then being prepared. How many of you have seen Zig Ziglar speak? Okay, a few of you. He's given that same speech thousands of times. And before every speech, a marketing professional, what does he do? He reviews it. We don't wing it as great persuaders. You review it, you become prepared. You know, I talked about Harvard and MIT, the biggest mistake with negotiators, they're not prepared. Oh, I'll just go and see what happens. I've done this before. I'm pretty good. Be prepared every time. Review your notes, what's happening in the industry. And number 10, personal development. They're always learning. You know, pat yourself on the back. They're going to seminars, they're reading books, the CDs, they're coaching, they're finding mentors. They don't want to take the long, slow, expensive route. They want to get it done. That's the best way to do it. Find people that are successful and find and mirror them and monitor them. Those are the top 10. Those are what great persuaders are doing. Woo-hoo. All right, good stuff. Let me just tell you a few quick stories. We'll call it a day. Now we have a couple of negotiations. We have The Secret, and our coaches and consultants will be standing by. A lot of information. And have you ever felt overwhelmed with a lot of information? Have you ever felt, well, why do we feel overwhelmed? Have you, your life was busy, and now you want to become real estate tycoons. Is there a lot on your plate? And when you feel overwhelmed, what does your brain do? It stops. I go home, I've got my list of things to do, my wife's got a list of things, there's sporting games to go to, the neighbor wants some help, and I just what? Take a nap. And that's true, you've got a lot on your plate. Here's the one thing I want you to understand about your human brain. We've talked a lot about the brain. When you feel overwhelmed at any time about what you're doing, about your investment, about your business, it's because what you're looking at is too big. You need to break it down into smaller, manageable, bite-sized pieces. Is it weekly? Is it daily? If I said, okay, today can you listen to a teleconference? Can you make 10 phone calls? Does that seem realistic to you? Can you do that in one day? If I say, why do most people never write a book? Is that a pretty big thing to look at? But can you write a page a day? Can you do 10 pages of research a day? Does this make sense? Whenever you feel overwhelmed, you break it down into smaller, manageable, bite-sized pieces. And that's the key with this information. That's why it's in a notebook. Review it. Think about it. What did you do? Every time you go in a persuasive situation, what did I do well? What could I do better? And that's the key. Just finish up with a quick story about a group of turkeys. Not applying anything, though. Don't throw anything. But they were excited. These turkeys went to a 3-day turkey convention on how to become better turkey. There was classes on getting better dates. There was classes on learning how to fly. There's other different classes. And the last class they took was learning how to fly. And turkeys choose not to fly unless the dog's chasing them. But they thought, wow, if we can learn how to fly, that's going to change our life, change our income. We're going to get out of Thanksgiving. Look at all these benefits. We're going to learn how to fly. So they went to this seminar with this great instructor. And they were watching these videos of takeoff and landings, touch and goes. And by the end of the day, these turkeys went in the air. And they were flying with the eagles. And success was theirs. Financial independence was theirs. They were so excited they were going to make it happen. So they came in for their landings. There was the close for the conference. They passed out business cards. They all said goodbye. And they all walked home. They all walked home. What am I saying? I've given you some great information. I know that it works. We're monitoring persuaders. This will change your income faster than anything else. Everything you want is on the other side of persuasion. If you want to make the world a better place, it's persuasion. You want to change your children's lives, it's persuasion. And that's the key. And that's why I appreciate you coming this few days and spending time with us. Thank you so much. Stay with us and do some exercises. But with that, everyone have an incredible life. Reach your financial independence and go make the world a better place. Thank you. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it. You want to find them again? Thanks so much. We'll stick around and answer all your questions. Please mingle with each other, hand out business cards, do business with each other. And we'll take a 5-minute break, and then you have your three choices. Mingle with the consultant, watch The Secret, or do another negotiation, either a medium one or an intense one.